lastly, this is really, for me, a passion to bring MVC to the workplace. So I'm really thrilled to have each of you joining us to explore this about ways that we can do this and do it better. And tonight's focus is on supporting the workplace, how we can identify opportunities and face the challenges of bringing MVC into organizations. So I'm excited to be here with Francois tonight. I want to give you a chance to hear a little bit about Francois.
Thank you, Martha. Hello, everyone. I'm also very excited being here because, like Martha, I'm passionate. Of course, passionate about MVC, but really passionate about doing this work in organizations. And actually, most of what I'm doing since a few months now is working in organizations. So I hope I can share some of what I've been doing and hopefully contribute to everyone on the call. And it's fun to be with Martha again. Most of my work has been with BNDC in California. Done a lot of leadership development. As Martha was saying, tonight's topic is supporting the workplace. How can we identify opportunities and face the challenges of bringing MVC into the workplace? We divided that topic in three parts. The first part will be looking for natural openings to bring MVC into the workplace. Then we'll look at MVC coaching. And the third part, we called it sitting in the fire. So that's our program for tonight. And I'm curious, Martha, if you would talk a little bit about connection or self-connection just to get us grounded in the call.
Yes. I just want to invite all of us to take a moment to self-connect. Take a moment to just focus on your breath so that we can all get present. Imagine that we're sitting in a room together in a circle. Each other's faces. Then just take a moment to look inside. First, using any observations, just notice anything that's going on within. Sensations. Going on with your body. Then take a moment to connect with your feelings. Emotions that are alive in you. From there, take a moment to look at any needs that you're aware of. Needs that are either met or unmet, just needs that are important to you in this moment. To take a moment for self-connection like this, even when I'm working in corporations, because I think it makes a huge difference in terms of self-awareness and ability to be present. So I'm grateful for just a moment of slowing down and being with what matters to us, each of us. Thank you for that little slowing down time.
Thank you, Martha. I'm also thinking that it might help also to get grounded and more settled in the call if you would say a little bit about what you did with Mickey last time to create a bridge between last call and this call.
I'll let people know that we were talking about empathy in the workplace, how we build relationships at work and create a culture of compassion. We took a look at an overview of the consciousness and how that precedes the skills and how we use MVC vocabulary in a way that doesn't have us get kicked out in 5 minutes. We looked at how we tend to connection in the context of being productive or efficient, meeting people where they are, meeting their pace, their tone, their aliveness, and really trusting that where they are is a gift, an expression of what matters to them in the moment. We also looked at presence and looked at how we work with difficult conversations, embodying care for everyone's needs and supporting people in hearing each other. Not necessarily a formal mediation role, but just focusing on understanding the shared goals before we look at solutions. So we're looking at needs before strategy. So that's a little taste of some of the things we went over last month, and we're going to build on that this month, starting with how we look at natural openings bringing MVC into the workplace.
I was listening to the recording today, and I was very touched and very pleased with some of the things that I heard, and which I felt in total alignment, and that piece around the vocabulary, one of you is saying that actually when I'm in the consciousness, it doesn't really matter what kind of language I'm using, and that's exactly the direction that I follow personally, mostly about inner work and when we are in that space, it can often transform the whole atmosphere. So I was very pleased with what I heard. So, all right, let's jump in. We have a packed program tonight. So the first part is natural openings to bring in VC. So here's some of them. Like, of course, here and there we can have some one-on-one conversations during meetings or, you know, just any kind of conversation that we can be part of at the workplace. And this is definitely an opportunity to listen, bring our NBC consciousness and the presence and create some kind of a connection with the person we're talking to, just living in DC. That's available to us many times. There's also other circumstances, like if we facilitate, you know, if we help team working together, some kind of team building activities. I believe that some of you are trainers. It might happen that you lead some team building activities. Or if you're not leading and you're part of it, there's also opportunities to bring the skills and the consciousness there in various forms. Actually, our choice for tonight is not to go in depth in these type of things. We want to name them, and we have one specific activity we want to do today. So I'll just name some of these opportunities. And of course, if you're a trainer, there's many possibilities of trainings where you could bring some elements from NVC. It could be trainings on feedback, how to relate to customer service, how to help people coaching others in the organization, and or performance review and that type of stuff. All places where you can bring the NVC consciousness. Actually, in one of the organizations I'm working with, part of the healthcare system, I'm working on creating a training to support the staff when they have challenges with the participants. The participants in this case are elders. People, I would say the youngest would be around 65 or 70. And there's a lot of challenges that are part of the daily work of these people there. I'm supporting some people there. They're going to deliver the training, and I'm working on the content. So there's a lot of things there where I bring my NVC spices. Although I want to say that it's not going to be like pure NVC. There's a lot of things that are more part of executive coaching literature. And those pieces are, the goal is to bring results quickly. But many of the things I will bring are very at least compatible with NVC. But the main piece that we want to play with tonight is actually possibly the area that I'm the most passionate about in NVC. And it's the area of dissolving enemy images or dissolving judgments. There's ample opportunities to do that at work or, you know, not just at work, but we're talking about the work context for now. And actually, I believe that it's one of the most important places to put our attention on and to build our skills. I truly believe that the potential for transformation is huge when we do that type of work. Let me define a little bit what I mean by enemy image. Recently, a few months ago, I was in a workshop with Mickey when she was leading a session about dissolving enemy images, and I asked her, I said, Mickey, what's the difference between judgment and enemy image? And she said, you know what? There's not much of a difference. She says, there's a little distinction, and since then I've been reflecting on that, and for me the main distinction is that it would be some kind of judgment that happens on a consistent basis in some ways. So a judgment that you carry on and that could build, or at least you have some continuity of having the judgment of one person or, you know, could be a group. But it could build as an enemy image when you have it over time. But at the same time, it's very close to any kind of judgments. It doesn't have to be something that happens on a, you know, on a long period of time. But typically, that's how we see it, the enemy image, something that happens over time. One thing that I like to bring when I talk about this subject is the definition of enemy. Because, of course, we are in the realm of evaluations for now. One thing that I like is, I don't remember where I read it, but the definition I have of enemy is, an enemy is someone whose story we don't know. An enemy is someone whose story we don't know. Of course, it's not fully complete because there's many people whose story we don't know that are not enemies at all. But it speaks to that quality that often once we know what's going on, what led someone to do what they did, they stop being enemies oftentimes. For me, that's very moving, and that touches why I'm so passionate about NBC, touches my sense of purpose and hope about the world, is that shift that can happen when we know what's going on with someone. It's very, very precious for me. And since we're talking about the workplace, I want to give another example about the work I'm doing with those people in Colorado. 3 weeks ago, I was talking with one person in the management, and he was having problems with someone in another branch of the organization. And I've heard from many people that she's not the only one struggling with that person. And so I was talking with her, and she was, you know, sharing, let's say, pretty much a bunch of judgments and evaluations about that person. And then I started working with her, just looking at the process of dissolving enemy image. Not the full thing as we're going to do in a few minutes, but just checking with her. And at some point I asked her, I said, well, you know, do you recall some moments in your life when you were kind of stiff and just in a place of really attached to having it your way? And that's the kind of judgment she was having of the other person. And she said, let me think. And then she was blank for a few seconds. And then she said, oh, I see. Oh, okay, she says, with my kids. I said, okay, so tell me a bit more, like what happened? What leads you to be in that place of, you know, you want to have your way and you're not very flexible? And she said, well, I'm just thinking that I know better. And that little piece brought the transformation that I'm talking about. Last week I checked with her. I said, how did it go, that meeting with that person? She said, it was lovely, it was beautiful. I also coached her. I told her to go there in the meeting with a sense of curiosity, not to try to solve any issues, but just go there and ask questions and try to understand what's going on, what led that person to do those things that you were upset about. And so that's what she did, and she said they had a very meaningful conversation, and she actually got support from that person for one of her issues, and I was very happy. And often in the people that I'm coaching, the question of enemy images comes up. And again, I think it is so key, so important. And that's actually, for me, the heart of NVC. NVC, nonviolent communication, comes from the Indie word, IMSA. And IMSA, I know there's many different translations that I read in the NVC literature, but the one I like is the one that says, the state of the heart that has no enemies. State of the heart that has no enemies. So for me, that's really at the core of NBC, to do that type of work so we can move out of these enemy images. As you could see, there's a lot I could say about it because it's so, so important for me. But I'll stop for now. And actually, what I'd like to do is to look at the handout that we shared. And I want to do some work with one of you who did work on the handout, this handout called Dissolving Enemy Image. But prior to that, what I would like to have happen is to have you split in groups of three, and I want to do my best to give as clear as possible instructions about what will happen during that time. In your group of three, you decide to work with one person, and that person would be one person who has ease in finding someone at work of whom she has or he has some enemy in it, or very solid judgment. If there's not one, then I'll invite you to stretch, to have something to practice on. That's the main thing. So hopefully you have one, and then what you will do as simply as this is that that person will share a little bit about the situation and receive empathy. And then after that, we'll get back in the big group, and I'd like to work with one of these persons that will receive empathy and then go through the handout about dissolving enemy images. So, typically, the person would describe the situation. Let's say, you know, I'm having, you know, problems with my boss, and it's been going for a while, and mainly what he does is that he, you know, he gives me orders and doesn't check if I'm comfortable with it or not. And so then the other people would offer their presence and then guess what might be going on in terms of feelings and needs. the basic NVC practice of offering empathy by asking questions about possible feelings and needs. And it could also take the form of just a reflection. It would be something like, what I'm getting from what you're saying is blah, 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 just to be in that quality of listening and present space. Let's go into groups, 15 minutes.
I don't know if you guys have strong enemy images, but I have one, and I would welcome your help with it. I need some help with it, so I'd appreciate it. I am a project manager. I've been a project manager of IT projects for several years, and I've always done a great job with my projects and have been highly regarded, and I'm just used to working with really wonderful teams and building strong teams. My job will be ending. Our company merged, and my position's been eliminated, and so I'm here to help facilitate a transition. But because of that, they don't want the people in transition to manage projects. So for the project I'm on now, the transition project, they hired an external project manager who was hired by the company we merged with. And I'm being kept on until September, which is a good thing because I get the income. But she's marginalized me to have next to no role, next to no voice, and it's not really a strong team. For example, she asked me to be a member of the core team, but she doesn't recognize me as a member of the core team. I just need to come to the meeting, write the status report like everybody else does, but she won't put down on the list that I'm a member of the core team. It was actually frustrating, and I haven't done very well with the NVC training that I have had in order to manage the situation.
I'm going to start backwards. I'm wondering if you feel disappointed because you need, because you would enjoy kind of more proficiency and like using NVC to move the communication along.
That's not quite it. I think, no.
Can I make another guess, a different guess?
Sure, please.
I'm wondering if you're feeling frustrated because you have a need for purpose in your work that isn't being met.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm hearing a few other things, like you were the lead project manager, and now you're marginalized, and it's almost like you've been alienated or severed from the position you had, and you've been demoted.
The key word was alienated. It's not the demotion because, you know, I know I'll be leaving. It's alienated, being alienated from the team, being kept out of meetings or not being recognized as an integral part of the team. Alienated is a good word. Partly, it's very different from the way I would have managed it if I were the project manager and we were in the reverse role, because inclusion is very important to me. I always make sure that everybody on my team feels included.
So that, it seems like that's a fairly high value of yours as a project manager, and when someone else takes over and you're there and you're not included, it's not meeting that value or need that you have for everyone to be included.
Yeah, that's true.
Like if it's a standard you operated by and this person has a different standard.
That's excellent, yeah.
I do have one other thing that is standing out that's like elephant in the room almost.
Mm-hmm.
Is the notoriety or the recognition that you receive for consistently getting results and managing your projects well, and now there's not that acknowledgement of you as a leader, you've been marginalized.
That's not the big thing, because the recognition isn't as important as maybe respect. As you said it, respect came more, not the recognition, but the respect that I give all of my team members usually get in return. There's a lack of respect here.
And you define respect as being included?
Not necessarily just that, but really treating people the way you want to be treated yourself. I think no one would like to be marginalized. It feels like a power play on her part, you know, to make sure that it's clear to me that she's in charge now. Yes, no, I don't need the recognition. For me, it's more about collaboration. That's another need that's been violated.
Yeah, I guess that alienated also covers excluded.
Mm-hmm.
The play.
Yeah.
And you need that form of play and collaboration and freedom of interaction and
challenge. I mean, I'm bored. I'm using it to time to build my business, but basically I'm not challenged.
Bored's a good word, huh? Not necessarily a good word, but it's just like it captures
the descriptive word, yeah.
I guess it's a feeling.
And when we have that feeling of being bored, did it need to be utilized or challenged?
Yeah.
Yeah, need for contribution or for service or, like you were saying, collaboration.
Feeling like I'm in touch with some things that I wasn't in touch with before.
You're feeling satisfied that,
I am.
That your needs have been completely heard?
Yeah, the alien issue was huge, and realizing that collaboration and inclusion of everyone on the team are important needs for me that are being violated, and powerlessness, I think I feel, too, because there's no politically correct way to address it, so there's a sense of powerlessness to bring it to her attention in a constructive way, because I think she's doing it deliberately.
And if we're giving empathy to you or giving to the other person, there must be a need there that they have.
Yeah,
they have a need for collaboration. Maybe they have a need for power.
Yeah.
Or establish in themselves as a leader when the leader's around.
Well, actually, there's another feeling that just came out. It's anger. I'm angry, I think, and I'm trying to hold it in. Angry.
You're trying to hold in the anger?
Yeah, because there's no constructive way to express it if someone is intentionally doing this, and she's the one right now with the power, then I look like the disgruntled team member.
So what I'm getting is that you've been alienated or you're bored, and that the additional part to this that's starting to emerge is that there doesn't appear to be a pathway to address it.
Yeah, but it's a finite amount of time. I think the way I look at it is I'm a life coach, and I've been wanting to have my own practice that's a full-time practice for the last few years since I've been certified. So really this is a blessing in disguise, and when I'm not busy because I'm marginalized, then I can work on building my business, which I do. So it's got a silver lining to it, and if I think about it, or even bring it to her attention, it'll probably only get me laid off sooner, and I can use the time. So there's two sides of the coin.
Seemed like you had a need to rationalize this anger that you had and to to say why it's okay. Maybe, I don't know.
No, I like that. Thank you for pointing that out.
Because I point out, it seems like you're angry because there's not a pathway to address this, and you didn't really explore that. You kind of justified it away.
Thank you for pointing that out.
So, do you want to talk to us about not having a pathway and how frustrating that can be, and that makes you angry?
Yeah, it is. It is frustrating. I feel a lot of anger about the difference in values and the situation, and this may sound like rationalization, I haven't been put in this position of not being the project manager because I'm not a good project manager. It's because my position's being eliminated, and I understand that. But I'm angry about being a team member on a team led by someone with values very different from mine.
Yeah, and I also hear that you're a life coach. And life coaches are about helping people live their dreams, and having to interact with someone like this is contrary to your life coaching.
Yeah, it's kind of a new experience.
Well, thank you, Sharon and Leo.
Thank you for the conversation.
Thank you both.
This breakout session is now ending.
All right, so now I'd like to work with someone who got empathy during this breakout session, and that also, if possible, and also worked on the handout before the call. And actually, I want to say before we find that person that the work of dissolving enemy images often is much easier after having received empathy. And also sometimes it is not possible before receiving empathy. For myself, I work so much on it that I can do it without having empathy, but I know it's very important for many people to do that work before. And even after receiving tons of empathy, sometimes it is just not possible to dissolve the enemy image. All right, so if you're both willing to play with me on this live and got empathy and worked on the handout prior to the call, would you press 1? So, Andrea, would you give us a little sense of the context, like, I don't know, just 10, 15 seconds, and then share the precise observation in that situation?
I work for a doctor.
The doctor, is that the person who you have an enemy image of?
Correct. I don't like the word enemy image of.
Would you be more comfortable with the judgment or?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So let's call it judgment.
What's
the observation?
The observation was that the doctor handed me a note to call someone that day, and they just wanted me to call someone that day, and I had several tasks I was already trying to accomplish at that one exact time because we're short-staffed right now. That's the observation. I was at a little evaluation in there, too, I think. But.
Yeah, but mostly what I got is that he handed you a note asking, what was the note asking for?
For me to call someone that day.
Yeah, so handed you a note for you to call someone that day. Okay, so I just want to also be clear for the people that are not looking at the document. So that's the first step in here, is to look at the precise observation, action taken by the person who you are, of whom you have an enemy image or a judgment. All right, next step, your feelings related to the observation. How did you feel when you received that?
I felt overwhelmed and stressed and reluctant.
Okay, thank you. And so those feelings were pointing to which needs of yours? Like, it's one of the assumptions of NVC that feelings are pointing to needs being fulfilled or not. So in this case, what's the needs that you found on those overwhelmed and stressed?
The biggest two that I found was just for understanding and support, and also like consideration for my other jobs, the other things I was already currently doing.
So understanding, is that you wanted to be understood or you wanted to understand?
I wanted to be understood. The overwhelming amount of things that I'm doing, to have like understanding and support, to know that it's hard for me to call someone that specific day when I have so many other things going on.
Mm-hmm. It's wanting to be, to be known for how much you're holding and the complexity that has to do with your specific role, and what was asked of you at that time was pretty difficult to accomplish, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just breathing with you. I mean, I know it's a process, but I want to be as much connected to you as possible. And actually, I am just imagining how it was stressful, the amount of work you're doing, and to have that note happening at that time.
Oh, and I wanted to add on that, too. She had already told the patient that I would call them that day.
Okay.
So that added a little bit more to it. I should have said that in the beginning.
So kind of not much choice for you, yeah? It seems at least it was not much choice since it was already announced. That's part of the observation as well. All right, so now let's do the part about opening our heart. So let's work on that, imagining what might be going on for the other. So what did you find that might have been possibly happening for the doctor? That's step number 4. Feelings possibly present for the person.
For one, she's probably feeling concerned for the patient, so she wanted them to know that she could trust us and that there was support in us and that we could get back to her as soon as possible when she was concerned about something. Also, with her, she was probably feeling overwhelmed because she has a lot of things on her plate as well, and it probably felt good to take a note, to take something she had to do off of her desk and to cross that off of her priority list, like that her to-do list, one thing was off of it, and that's a satisfying feeling, too.
So she could get some relief.
Yeah, relief.
Delegating that way, So you imagine she might have been concerned, and that in terms of needs, if we jump to the next step, step five, there was some something around wanting to care for the patient, to contribute to her peace of mind and clarity about what will happen in the future. So that was part of what's going on for her, and also she might have been feeling overwhelmed, like a full plate as well. Just wanting the relief and actually wanting support.
Right. That's what I had, yeah. She probably wanted support, too, and maybe even order, because then she can have everything taken care of. If she comes to me, then I call, and she knows that's going to happen. Like, that order will happen.
All right. So let me check with you. When you did fill this handout, did something shift inside you when you were working on these questions 4 and 5, when you were exploring what might have been going on for her? Was there a change?
Yeah, it did. I mean, I felt, like, instantly more compassion.
Yeah.
Way to be like, wow, we're all going through this right now. We're all in this together, kind of, maybe even more of a connection.
All right, thank you. So that's exciting for me to hear. And, you know, this is the basic elements of dissolving the enemy images and opening our hearts, is to just go in that place of questioning what might be going on for the others. And often just doing that brings back their humanity, and then the compassion might flow, so I'm happy to hear that. But still, I have more steps, because often people are, at that point, are still pretty upset. And this process, I find it pretty complete, multi-angle way to look at that situation. So let's continue playing with this. So the next question, number 6, is could there be a misunderstanding in this situation? And I bring that question because I've heard somewhere that 80% of the conflicts are happening because of misunderstandings. So let's check it out. Could there be a misunderstanding there, like a link to the observation when she gave you that note asking you to call that person? Did you find something in there in terms of possible misunderstanding?
The only thing I could really think of is that maybe she didn't know how much stuff I already had to do. She didn't know that. I don't know if that comes as like a misunderstanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe in her mind, you're working, you're busy, but she's unclear about the specific of your work, of the context of the day. And maybe she was thinking that it's pretty easy to do. So that's, yeah, it counts in my book as a possible misunderstanding. And I'm even thinking, like, maybe it's not the case, but maybe it was, she thought it would have been a service to you that it's already said, she already said to the person that she's going to receive a call. So maybe so, wanting some ease for you that you don't have to explain everything, like it's something like that. Maybe she intended to care for you by doing that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that maybe so she would be available for my call. Like, I wouldn't have to call several times. Like, I would just maybe have to call once because she knew my call was coming through at that point in time, so she knew to wait for it.
Yeah, so that's a possible misunderstanding. And I don't know, but for you, but for me, that just knowing that changes something inside me. Does it do something for you as well?
Yeah, it did.
Because one of the things that, for me, in terms of NVC, I see it, the core things are opening our heart, as we did, like, with imagining possible feelings and needs, but also opening our minds. Something I got from Inbal Kashtan, she was framing the work she was doing around diversity in those two ways, and I was struck. I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. And this kind of questioning about could there be misunderstanding, for me, is part of opening our minds, using our intelligence, our brain, to question, work with our thoughts, work with our beliefs, work with our assumptions. Imagine what might be going on that we don't know. So that's the part of opening our mind. And both of these parts are helpful in terms of creating connection and compassion. Next question. The question is, are you giving any meaning to the observations? And I want to say a little bit before you answer that. I've heard from Marshall, and I've heard from Tony Robbins also, a motivational speak, that when we feel pain not because of what actually happened, but we feel pain because of the meaning we attribute to what actually happened. So let's check with you. When you got that note asking you to call someone, was there some meaning that was created?
Yeah, I instantly thought to myself that I was going to let her down, that I was going to have another person relying on me, on top of all the other people that already were.
Okay, so that added to your pain, because it's, I'm imagining part of your vision and your dream in doing your work is that you want to contribute to people, to their well-being, and now you're just putting it in that way that is another one that you won't be able to take care of was painful for you, yeah? What I mean by meaning would be something like, I'll never be able to do that job correctly, or she will never understand how is it to work with a nurse, or that kind of blanket statement about what might be happening in the future. Could you take just a little bit of time and see if something like that was created?
Could you give me another example?
In the context, an example would be, you know what, I'm not good enough to do that job. I'm not fast enough. There's too much stuff coming my way. I should just drop that. Or that kind of meaning that the observation, you would jump from the observation to a meaning and then have the pain in relation to the meaning more than the observation.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just felt like that I was never going to accomplish this job all the way. Like it was just never going to get finished.
That job being what you had to do for the day, or?
What I had to do for her, and it kind of just tacked on everything else because I handled the billing and things like that, so it was a question regarding that. And there's other people who need that help also, so I just felt like when it was thrown on, I just felt like I'm just never going to be able to accomplish any of this.
Okay, so I'll never be able to accomplish any of this. All right, thank you. So now we can look at the question number 8, which is, if you created a meaning, is this meaning or these meanings necessarily true?
No.
All right. And this is also part of opening our minds, and this is borrowed for those of you who know about Byron Katie, which I find her work, which actually she calls the work, very helpful to work with our thoughts. So that's one of her main questions. Is that true? So we can look at our assumptions. So it's not necessarily true. It could be true, but it doesn't have to be true. So that changes something. The last question, imagine a scenario that would lead you to have as close to no blame at all for the person. And that for me is so important, because you know what happens often is when we talk to some people, we finally sit down, we have this connecting conversation, and the person says, you know what, here's what led me to do what I did that you didn't like. And once we understand what was going on for the other, we say, oh, I see, wow, if I had known that, I wouldn't be so upset. Thank you for sharing. We finally understand. And I believe that part of my hope for the world is actually to use our creativity, our imagination, even when we don't know what might be going on for the other. Just try to imagine something where, when we think about that possibility, it doesn't have to be accurate, it's not important, but when we think about that possibility, we stop being stressed, because that's my goal. When we dissolve enemy image, we stop being stressed. We feel better. We have more of our energy to take care of our needs, as opposed to use our energy to be upset at someone. And then actually when we can relax and be less stressed, when we meet that person, there's much more chance that we can have some connecting conversation than if we come from an upset place. So did you find something, some kind of scenario, something you don't know?
Yeah, I did. I just kind of like thought in my head, okay, she has a 2-year-old, so maybe it's like she had a horrible night with her 2-year-old, and like she's having trouble with her husband, and then she comes into work and already feels overwhelmed about everything, and so she's just trying to clear her mind and clear something off of her just a little bit so that she feels like she's accomplishing something.
All right, so you created a bigger context, maybe problem with kids and husband and tired, and like we know doctors often they work like those 18, 20-hour shifts, and she's just trying to breathe and find a way. Yeah, there's something like that. And when you have that type of scenario going on, does that lead you to have close to no blame?
Yeah, I would gladly take it if I knew that.
Yeah. Well, I guess it could be something similar to that. It could be something else. Anyways, we never know. It could be actually that she's been working with you before and she really trusts you that you're accountable and that anything is possible. She might even have been thinking that you might enjoy doing that type of thing. Like, who knows? We're all a mystery. All these things we're doing is such a complex thing. And all right, so thanks a lot, but I want to check one last thing. When you did the process, you moved from a place of being pretty upset to a place of being peaceful. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say so.
And you agree with me that doing that type of work would have significant impact in the workplace?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much, Andrea. Thank you, everyone. And I'm complete on this. Martha, I'm thinking possibly to just move on to the next piece. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm ready to move on. I would like to talk about a natural opening because I think Francois just worked with one, and that is when people are having enemy images of each other. That's a great way for us to come in to an organization and support people on shifting those enemy images. But there's another one that I like that I think is even more powerful and more likely to get me in the door. to teach NVC and to train and to coach around NVC, and that is to actually use coaching as a strategy for connecting with the aliveness in the workplace and working with people so that there's more of it. There's more energy, there's more connection between people, and so I would like to work with you all using a combination of nonviolent communication and the GROW model. The GROW model is an early coaching model that most coaches don't use anymore, but I like it because I've adapted it so that it's really about 90% doing NVC work. What I find is that it's not only easy into an organization, but it's also something that they can really practice easily on their own without a lot of support. So sometimes we set up peer coaching so that they're coaching each other using this model where the focus is really on empathic connection. And the other thing about it is that a coaching and a coachee relationship is a partnership relationship. It's not a domination type relationship where the coach is seen higher or better or more of a mentor to the coachee. It's really much more about them taking a rigorous approach to asking powerful questions that get people self-connected and then into action around getting their needs met. Here the focus is really on what you want and not on what you don't want. And you'll notice that one of the handouts is on moving towards what we want. But even that one starts with what you don't want. And I love going into organizations and starting with what do you want. Because it's a different type of energy, it's a different kind of flow, and there's something about it, the intervention itself, that really supports people in creating what they want. I want to just share the four steps of the GROW model. I'll do a little demo, and then I'll give you each a chance to practice it. And not everyone will get a chance to practice it, but you'll be in small groups where you'll get to use the GROW model with one person who's looking at a goal that they want to move into. So the GROW model stands for goal, reality, options, and will. The goal stage is really where you look at what are the outcomes or what do you want out of this session or much longer term, so we look at the goal short term and long term. And the R, the reality stage, is traditionally about things like, so what are your weaknesses, or what resources do you have available to reach this goal? And what I like to use the reality stage, as you might imagine, is for empathy, being really present to what's real right now in the moment, and really connecting with their deepest needs, and then taking a layer deeper and finding out what the needs are underneath that. And so naturally we connect with the feelings, the emotions that are connected to the goals, and what's driving them? What's the driving force about why this goal is important? And it's a really rich way to have people awaken to what matters to them. And so, yes, in the reality stage, I also might look at, you know, what's some of the experience you bring to this situation, but mostly I'm looking at their feelings and needs at the reality stage. And I actually spend about 90% of the coaching session in the reality stage. And then we open up to the options, which are all about what are some of the strategies, some of the ways that you could get these needs met. And we brainstorm big and wide and get out your magic wand and what if you had unlimited resources kinds of questions, so that it's not about me telling them what their options are, but asking. And really trusting and believing in the person being coached that they are resourceful and creative and that they can come up with their own solutions versus relying on the coach. So it's a very empowering process. And then, of course, the will stage is really about what's the action plan look like? What are you willing to do? What are some of the steps here so that it's very similar to what are the requests you want to make of yourself or what are the requests you want to make of others? It's a way to really build in an action plan that's connected to the strategies that are likely to meet the need. So that's a little bit of an overview of it. What I'd like to do is work with one person so you can see it in action before you go and practice it with each other. I wonder if there's someone who has a goal that you'd like to work on that you may need some NVC-style connection of really connecting with the heart and what matters to you deeply around something you'd either like to accomplish short-term or long-term. So I'm excited to work with you, Laurel, and while you're thinking for a moment about your goal, I'm just going to invite the rest of the folks to get out a piece of paper and on one side of it write the words feelings, if you draw a line down the middle, and then on the other side write the words needs. And throughout this coaching session, I invite you to pay attention in particular to whatever Laurel might be feeling or needing in the moment. Okay, well, Laurel, let me start with you. So what would you like to coach about tonight?
A goal I have is to become more of an empowering leader in a range of different things. I lead this volunteer team. I'm the chairman of the board for a nonprofit. And so that's the particular issue, because the executive director, who's the sole employee and founder, and I are good friends, but our business styles are at times divergent, mostly because I have a big business background and she doesn't have a business background, and we're starting to pursue large money, like five figures, six figures. And I find sometimes I know I'm not very empowering. I'm gritting my teeth through conversations so I don't start throwing a fit practically, or just have to get off the phone because I'm beyond frustrated, or my blood starts to boil, and that doesn't lead to empowering somebody. Since I'm chairman of the board, it also doesn't lead sometimes to empowering the whole team.
Okay, so I'm getting that your blood boils about this, and I hear this desire for an empowering team, and I'm wondering if you could sort of paint the picture, describe the vision of what that would look like, what that would feel like if your team was fully empowered.
Things would flow smoother. Even if we're disagreeing on things, it would not be we're firmly entrenched in different positions. Like we're pursuing some money, came out of the blue, and I have a certain number, 100,000, I want to ask for, Laura has 150, and we're firmly entrenched. And instead, to have some open communication without everyone's ickiness getting in it, and with the rest of the team and having individual conversations with them, I suspect sometimes they might feel like they're in the middle versus, you know, our ability to really look at the sanctuary as an entity and really work, I don't know, it's not that we don't have disagreements, but it just flows smoother and that no one's getting upset or crying or angry, but rather going, okay, well, we don't agree with this, let's look at this. Ease is the word that just came to mind. Because as I'm describing, I think I mix in there what's not happening. I could feel my chest starting to tighten.
Okay, so you want ease, you want openness. And if you had
inspiration is the other word that came to mind.
Inspiration?
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if you could actually just step into imagining those needs being fully met for a moment. And even expand your vision further. Not only are you not entrenched, but you have a team that really works beautifully together. If you could just imagine it being over the top, wonderful for you, what would that look like?
Everyone openly communicating, everyone supporting the other one, everyone troubleshooting different concepts because so much of what we're doing is new. Everyone doing what they say they're going to do, including me, roughly when we say we're going to do it. We're all volunteers. Making that a priority because we're just so inspired and having so much fun doing this. Like everything else, when you're having fun doing something, it gets to the top of your list versus, oh dear God, I have to go do this project. So it would be all about just having an enjoyable time and inspiring other people to join us.
Yeah, there's something about the way you're talking about being inspired and it being fun that feels really energizing to me. I'm noticing my own body reacting to it.
Good. Martha, would you like to come do some coaching with us, please?
Yes, I would.
Sorry, I couldn't resist with the inspiring, but that's really it, that people go, wow, I want to be involved. How can I do this? Because it's just so enjoyable to be working with us.
You know what I call this when you go to this place of, you know, I want to be involved and it's enjoyable. This is really about being with the living energy of your needs, the beauty of it, the wonder of it, the awe of being in this inspired, fun place. And if you can create from that place, if you can brainstorm and strategize from that place of what you're going towards.
Do you want details?
Yeah. What are some of the details?
That we would have a regular volunteers that feel happy and fulfilled, or more regular volunteers, but all the volunteers would be happy and fulfilled, even though it's a town of just 5,000 people. That we would have people who regularly ask, how can I help in a way that will benefit you guys and in a way that you guys need help, and that we have a regular donor base. We actually have a goal of having 1,000 people donating $10 a month, and that we have some larger scale donors, and that we're able to finally create and pull off a very large scale day of celebration of disabled animals that we've been planning for a couple years, and that it all, again, just kind of flows.
Hmm. And when you talk about the disabled animals, I just sense some deep compassion coming from you.
Oh, it's so fascinating. I don't work with them. I've been around them. And to watch other people, like we've taken one of the dogs in a cart, which is like a wheelchair, to Santa Monica, and now literally even big celebrities stop to pet her, to play with her, because it's so compelling. They see how happy she is, and I swear I could see people, some people who think at first, well, the poor dog, they start to see how happy they are, and they translate that to, well, wow, people with physical disabilities or maybe even other disabilities can be happy too, because I think a lot of us think that if someone's physically disabled, they can't be happy. And we see them, and I hear from people who are physically disabled how invisible they seem. And so that's the really cool thing of it, is it translates from animals to people and back to animals. It's very synergistic.
It's such a holistic approach to the healing thing that can happen here. I'm very excited about this, and I'm wondering if you want to explore some options about how to get from the entrenched, the disempowering leader to the empowering leader who has happy, wonderful, fulfilled volunteers, and that you're really moving towards your dream here.
Yes, I would be interested in doing that.
All right, well, let's just brainstorm a few options. What are some ways that you could move toward this vision?
Well, while I was talking and also listening to you, one of the first things I thought of is to literally have a session with our board that says, kind of what you're doing now, what do we want it to be? What do we want it to feel like? What do we want it to look like? What do we want other people to feel like? And to help our board create that vision and then create from that. Because I think everyone are really, actually really great creators, but too often nowadays we're creating from crisis mode or from fear. But if we could get a shared vision and then keep grounding back to that shared vision, that's the first thing that came to mind. I could see that also working as a group, but also working individually with, we only have 5 board members, as working with individually with everyone to even start with that and then have a group session. And maybe even invite some key people who are interested. We've got 1,000 Facebook fans and other people who support, you know, are interested, and say, who's interested in doing kind of a creative session? And then get other people involved, because sometimes it's so synergistic. If you get, like, I had lunch with this old friend of mine and his wife last week, the ones who want to donate potentially 6 figures, and I was so energized from that conversation, you know, I could barely stand it, because it's just so nice when someone shares similar visions. And so if we could maybe get other people even talking about it, kind of a, like, what's the word I was looking for, a planning meeting. You know, those people may not help execute it, but, you know, what are some ideas? Kind of a vision meeting. You know, it would have to be a virtual thing on a call or something. Those are the things that come to mind for me.
I hear a lot of ideas popping here, and I'm wondering if you would like to choose one that would take you forward.
It's probably part one and two of the same thing, is working with the board, working individually with each of the board members, and then having a kind of group board call on, let's look at what our vision is. So talking individually with each of them and getting them inspired, and then saying, let's all get together and have a call that's not a board meeting, but specifically kind of, again, vision meeting. That I'm excited about.
What are the needs that you're most connected to when you get excited about this work with the board individually and with the vision? What are the needs that are coming up here as you're exploring this?
I'm not sure if this is a need, but the word that I come up with a lot is inspiration and creativity and connection and enjoyment, pleasure, growth, purpose. Some of it actually is about predictability and consistency. I see that word, those two terms, because what, and stability and reliability, a lot of what's happening now is we're led from one crisis or drama to another, and that's exhausting. So to have some predictable and consistency and support and reliability, as well as to have some understanding amongst everybody.
So I'm wondering what the next step is for really keeping these precious needs.
Probably for me to either see what's available or develop a little something, kind of a little talk sheet, to do a little mini training, if you will, or discussion with again, our individual board members, and then plan a group meeting.
Would you like to let me know how that goes?
Yes, I would. I would appreciate that opportunity.
Well, I'm thrilled to just walk through the GROW model with you, and I'm wondering if there's any value that you got from it that you'd like to share with the group.
I feel re-energized. I feel purposeful. I feel happy, actually. I feel alive. Before, I wasn't feeling much of any of that. I love what I do. I love this volunteer work that I do, and I love the animals. But a lot of times when I know I have to deal with something and the phone rings, I think, oh, dear God, what are we doing now? You know, what do I have to deal with now, or what am I going to have to listen to? And I don't feel that. I feel more kind of the example you were just going through, and as a process Francois stepped through with, when she realized that the needs of the other, of the doctor and the person, it's like, oh, yeah, that all makes sense. I also feel that more about, oh, okay, instead of dreading everything, I feel opportunity.
And is there any request that you'd like to make of yourself that will keep you connected to this re-energized, purposeful piece that you're taking away?
That I lay out a timeline for myself, and no matter what I get pulled into, for me, what actually works is to either, because I process a lot when I think, is literally to write up kind of a little sheet for myself of all of this, of the steps you just took me through, even if that's, you know, already available, when I put it into my own thing and do that, I think we can do it before I see Laura, then I can keep myself enthused about here's what I'm moving toward and not get pulled back into here's where I am now. Here's where I was is probably more accurate.
Okay, I'm thrilled hearing that. Thanks for volunteering and for playing with the GROW model with me.
Thank you, Mars. I very much appreciate it, and to the rest of the group for being there for this.
Really appreciate the rest of the group, too. Let's actually just hear some of the feelings that you heard Laurel go through, and without saying when you noticed it or how you noticed it, let's just hear some of the feelings that came up for Laurel that you noticed throughout this short session.
Inspired. When I used the word inspired and energized and alive, I personally was inspired hearing her name her feelings so readily, and she just really got into identifying her feelings. And that's an area that I'm growing, and it was inspiring for me to hear her just really get in touch with them. For me, it takes more work. Thank you.
Yeah, she's right there with her feelings, and it does take some time. You know, I'm working with a group now that I'm amazed at how quickly they're coming up with their feelings and needs. Anyone else hear any other feelings, whether she named them out loud or you could sense them? What were some of the other feelings?
Frustration.
Mm-hmm. She also named a lot of needs. Let's hear some of those. Some of them she said out loud, but anything that you might have noticed that she didn't say, like you're reading between the lines.
Collaboration. Support.
Flow. Flexibility.
Real give and take.
Fun. Mutuality. Mm-hmm.
Co-creativity.
I just want to say that coaching is really, for me, a practice of noticing the needs in every moment, really supporting the people I'm coaching around awareness and working towards getting some of those needs met. So I love this approach to getting into organizations and working with people, and one of the organizations I'm working with now, we're not working at the top level, but we are working with very senior level. What happens is they go for a week of training, and sometimes that's spread out like three here and two a month later, but then they have 6 months of coaching afterwards. And I find it very powerful. The things that people are able to do with this process are just mind-blowing, that not only are they dissolving enemy images, but they're really using it to create relationships in a new way. People are asking for what they want, making requests. There's a lot more authenticity where people are being really real with their frustration and with their solutions to those frustrations. So for me, it's got a lot of promise. And also for this organization, they're talking about doing a research study where 20 people who are customer service reps will go to a week of NVC training and then have 6 months of coaching afterwards, which is half an hour a week. And then they're going to compare the results to a control group. And I think this is going to have huge ramifications for the NVC community, because what I believe the results are going to be. Of course, we don't know yet, but I believe the results are going to be really definitive. I really believe that the MVC community is at a tipping point. I see a lot more of us that are working full-time doing this, and that there's a lot more need out there for even more of it. So I'm very excited about where all this is leading. We want to give you a chance to practice this GROW model now and get into small groups. What we're going to do is we'll again get into groups of three, but choose a different person to be coached this time. The rest of you will walk through the GROW model, just asking some questions about what the goals are, then spending some time empathizing in the reality stage, then exploring a few options, and then what's one thing that they will do to move forward to get their needs met. And, you know, I want to just mention one of the things that I'm excited about before we do this, which is that I've been working with Henry Wade from Toronto, and instead of empathy groups, we're trying something new, which is called impact groups, which is a combination of empathy and action, so that every empathy session ends with some kind of action or some doable that the person is requesting of themselves or others to take their process forward, even if it's deepening awareness, but often it is about taking some kind of doable step. So I encourage you to look for opportunities for that, too. So when we get into groups, go through the GROW model with one person. Any questions or concerns or clarifications on that? Let's do about 12 minutes. You may not get through it all, but don't worry. Flow with it. Just stay really present to what's alive in the person you're coaching. So it'll be two-on-one coaching. Okay, then. Let's get them into groups so people who want to can get started.
Okay, so maybe try to make it simple.
I was going to start by coaching a little bit. Do you want to tell us what your goal is?
Well, I guess I should just tell you quickly what the situation is. I'm working with a colleague who's become a friend on developing workshops on conflict resolution and management for the workplace. And it's a lot of energy. We're really wonderful together and a lot of excitement. The only problem is in another 2 months, she's from Switzerland originally and she's going back there. And then I kind of have to do it on my own or piece something else together. And I guess I am anxious about it.
So that's the situation. And what are you wanting?
I want to go forward with this. If she can join me, maybe at some point she could come back if we have big enough assignments to do for workshops and this coaching within companies. But until then, you know, I'll kind of have to keep this going. It's going to be me. And I want to continue this work. I love it. But it's also kind of scary because I'm somewhat new to it and, you know, I'm pressing right up against the fear.
If you were to dream, what would the ultimate success look like for you?
It would be big, where we'd start making our way, get known, you know, in different settings, companies, and then, you know, just really we'd be known, well known. And it does involve, I'm also a certified coach and I love NVC, so it would be something that would ultimately shift and transform people.
I just want to underline that. So you just really want to support people in having a lot of wonderful transformation.
Yes. And to do it in a way, which is why I took this course, to apply it to, you know, the business world, which is a bit of a challenge to speak in these terms, the NVC. But that would be exciting because that's an area that probably would be more resistant.
Cited the possibility of being heard and being able to share this way of being in the world that's precious to you and community where it may be unfamiliar like that?
Yes.
Sounds like you're excited about the challenge, knowing that it could be a good challenge for you and an appetite for challenge.
Yes, I seem to, ultimately, although then I get scared. And I guess somehow I forge ahead. But the reality is, you know, we only started doing this maybe 4 months ago. And now it's kind of being taken away from me a little bit. I have to recreate.
Do you want to get back to reality and explain a little bit how are things going right now?
Okay. We're still forging ahead and trying to figure out what companies and what contacts people to speak to. I can be pretty good about that in ordering with the types of things that have to be done. So it's almost like we're going through a checklist. So it's moving along and you're kind of the practical stuff. But hidden behind that is like, oh my God, I'll be doing this myself in a little bit.
That feels a bit like a barrier because you're one person.
Yes, it would be me. And also there's almost like, I don't know, there's a bit of maybe I'd even say sadness that, or a missing, because I so love working with another person, at least, you know, in a very collaborative way. And that's what has really gotten me sparked and generated as well. So I'm going to miss that piece of it.
Do you think that there's an option to partner with someone else?
I have started thinking that. At first I was, you know, I just thought, oh my God, you know, what am I going to do? But probably there are, yes. It's not going to be or not going to seem to be as ideal initially, just because of the special relationship that you know, she and I have developed. But yes, there are probably different options, you know, that can be pursued, and you know, some of it will just be me starting to ask around or just observe who might be good at doing this type of work and who would want to partner with me. I have to really have a broader perspective and understand that there are options, especially because some of this work, I mean, we already have this wonderful workshop, so it would be inviting somebody else in, which is kind of an easy task because it's already been developed. There's like almost like a bit of despair and missing already, knowing that this is going to have to shift the relationship, but sort of moving through it and beyond it.
Do you consider it a long-distance relationship?
Yeah, I mean, certainly we can speak on the phone, you know, there's Skype and stuff, if we want to still almost like do our mastermind stuff. And maybe if it's a big enough client, she could come back, but not the smaller one, certainly. And she'll be doing some other work. So, but yeah, that's a possibility too. That's an option, that on the big things, you know, she'll come back perhaps. The other option is, in addition, that I find one or more people that would be good and that I could really partner with going forward.
If you could, you know, just step up to 10,000 feet and look down at the situation and imagine just a couple more ingredients that you could throw into the mix that would really make it work for you, what might those ingredients be?
Goodness. And there's a lot of stuff for ingredients. Maybe form some sort of consortium, which I've seen. You know, people, you could have a group of coaches or whatever it is, so, and you can draw upon, and you're all doing your own things, but yet you are joining together, you know, on certain projects, because then you know it's there, it exists, you know, as a resource. So maybe something like that would really make sense.
Please bring your conversation to a close. This breakout session is now ending.
I think it's a small enough group that, let's just say, press 1 if you'd like to speak. Hey, Laurel. I so appreciate this opportunity because I'm so energized from it, because I'm a consultant by trade and I've worked in the ad business where you always have all the solutions. And you're always leading everyone, someone times kicking, pulling, screaming, you know, trying to inspire them, that it was such a fascinating opportunity to not be doing that and just to guide someone through it. But I'm just amazed. Generally, it was just so enriching for me to see, to empowering, actually, and this helps the process that we talked about earlier, because I can see how I can guide people through things instead of always having all the solutions, because having all the solutions too is beyond exhausting.
All right. Thank you, Laurel. What about you, Swindler?
Well, I was the person being coached. Starting with that goal, is so, so powerful. It sets the whole stage, really. Between that and I think you said, Martha, you spend about 90% of the time on the reality part. But, you know, goal seems to me also, you know, not as much as the reality, but you really have to flush that out because that's all the good, you know, the positive stuff.
There's a lot of wanting and longing and desire in there, so worth really checking out. A lot of times people will come with what we call a presenting agenda, as in, this is what I think my goal is for the session. But if we go a little deeper and dig into it, there's often something even more important than what they first come with. Anything you're taking away from that?
In our triad, I thought it was very interesting that the person being coached was flushing out their goal, they're working on it, and the other person in our triad, when the coachee wanted to move to the next level, they questioned if they had their goal really fleshed out. And until we really flesh that goal out and perhaps create measurable results there, the rest of it isn't quite as vibrant. Now, it doesn't help us with that goal until that goal is something that we're passionate about. We've identified the feelings and needs. And so I'm with you, Susan, that the importance of it being fleshed out is probably the most of the biggest part of the work for me.
I also hear you speaking about something else that is really about bringing NBC into it, is making that goal observable. Because sometimes people will come to coaching with something very vague, like, I want to be a better leader. And if I'll turn that into something that is observable, then it can be pretty nebulous coaching. Anyone else want to share either something that's getting from this piece of the call or the earlier part on dissolving enemy images?
You asked the question, Martha, any comment about what we did earlier or this GROW model? And
yes.
I see that they're related, that if we are going to grow and develop in the NBC model, dissolving enemy images is part of that. And we can actually use the GROW model in dealing with what's our goal. Would we like to dissolve all enemy images, and what does that look like? And we could actually use this GROW model in connection with that first part.
Also use it to look at our own goals in terms of bringing NBC into organizations. And I know Marie has written a chapter for the Change Handbook about how to really pay attention to the organizational needs, which I really enjoy. I think that there's a lot of things we can do collaboratively around making NBC more accessible, both through languaging and through the processes. So this will be a real chance to collaborate together on how we'll take NBC into organizations in a much bigger way. The other thing that we wanted to talk about a little bit tonight was sitting in the fire.
Yeah, and I'm thinking to kind of piggyback with what Aiden was saying, that if you look at the end out, you got, like, about difficult conversations. Like, when I think about sitting in the fire, I'm imagining this has to do with possibly one of these intense and challenging, scary conversations. So if we often call, like, difficult conversations. And also part of that, if you take a look at it, there's something around dissolving enemy images as well. So it's fun for me to go in that place of imagining all these pieces being integrated to something whole. That's the piece that I wanted to say about that for now. I'm curious, is there anyone who did work on the end out around difficult conversations and asked some questions? We might have a few minutes to explore that. So if you have a question related to this topic and this end out of difficult conversations.
While people are generating their questions about that, I just want to say one other thing about the beauty of difficult conversations is that once we've used NBC for a while, we really start to welcome the energy that comes with intense conversations. And one of the things that I love is that we start to really trust that when there's a conflict, no matter how intense, that there are wonderful needs that are driving that conflict. Just by being open, opening our heart to what's going on there, that anger is just frustrated love or frustrated desire to do something differently, that we can really be present to people in a new way. And that's the thing that MVC has done the most for me for. It's where I have the most hope in terms of being able to change the world. It's by bringing MVC into organizations and through this process of really trusting the needs that are driving the conflict. You know, I have a friend named Roger Schwartz who wrote The Skilled Facilitator, and he said that a lot of beginning facilitators, when people get emotional, they say, let's take a break. But a skilled facilitator knows, now you know you've hit pay dirt, because they're talking about something that really is important to them. And that's the same thing around MVC, is like once people get emotional, we know that they're very close to touching into what matters deeply to them. And if we can support them in unearthing and uncovering that, then we can really create magical relationships that support people in developing those quality connections that people and organizations are so hungry for. And so it's really wonderful work that we get to do with them.
I thought the Difficult Conversations article was really wonderful. It expressed things so clearly, and I loved having the vocabulary, which is something that we spoke about last meeting. It's a more abbreviated vocabulary for the corporate world, but it was very, very helpful. And Martha, I had a question, because you at the end you had this comparison with focused conversation method. First of all, I'm curious about that. I actually went on the website to get more information about that and whether you think that's also another good way, and that's more like a true facilitation, it seems. Is that another good approach also for us to perhaps pursue and gain more information?
It is. You know, I originally put that in there because the audience for that article, it was published in Group Facilitation magazine, so it was facilitators who are largely familiar with that model. But it was developed in the 60s, the same time that Marshall developed his model, and the similarities are striking because it starts with observations, and then it goes to importance, which is very similar to the needs. And then it goes to reactions, which is about the field, and then decisional, of course, is very similar to request. But the way they do it is they do it in a group where we talk about all the observations up front. And then we talk about all the things that are important or significant about the particular issue. And everyone gets a chance to speak knowing that they're going to use these four steps. So it's a little different way. But, yeah, I would certainly recommend checking it out.
I'm really taken with what you guys have done tonight to shift me, at least, from, I've just written down, not being nice, trust wonderful needs instead. There's a wonderful shift there about not worrying about myself being nice, being appropriate, being reasonable and all this stuff, but just being totally there around the needs instead. From niceness to needs. Feeling inspired.
Yeah, I really get the wind of inspiration. All right, so let's move towards the closure. But I actually would like, Martha, would you lead a little piece around self-connection?
Just do a little silent self-connection and really follow your breath. Your spine. Connect with what's most alive in you. Notice any needs that are prominent. Consciousness, whether they're met or unmet. I mean, if we can just hear one word per person about any need that is standing out for you now in this moment.
I have a need for family, for reassurance, for love right now.
Beautiful.
A need for authenticity.
Gratitude. My need for gratitude is met.
Well, thank you all. I also want to thank Francois. I really appreciate our dance together tonight. The dance of co-facilitation is always energizing for me, especially when I get to do it with you, Francois. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. And next month, you'll be with Francois and Nikki.
Okay. So I'll take this opportunity to thank you also, Martha, and say goodbye to everyone.